listen up. We've got a war zone here today, right in our heartland. And across the USA, these multinational bastards don't use tanks and guns, it's true. But they've declared a war on us. Fight back, it's up to you. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling the shots. Going to work could be the death of you and me, but we're not unarmed. In solidarity, Jim Beals and Karen Silkwood, the list goes on and on. With every year that passes, 60,000 more gone. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling the shots. When they boost your copay,
war on the workers.
Say
war on the workers.
When they talk privatization,
war on the workers.
And cooperation,
war on the workers.
When they call you a team,
war on the workers.
You better learn how to scream.
War on the workers.
Oh, that's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Oh, it's a war on the workers. And it's time we started calling. Can see.
War on the workers.
And when they poison your water,
war on the workers.
Don't go like lambs to the slaughter.
War on the workers.
And when they foul up the air,
war on the workers.
You gotta show that you care.
War on the workers.
When they talk WTO,
war on the workers.
You best be screaming hell no.
War on the workers.
Education. It's a war on child labor protection. It's a war on the 8-hour day. It's a war on occupational health and safety. It's a war on social security. Now, thanks to WTO, GATT, NAFTA, MAI, the IMF, and the World Bank, it's a worldwide war. Oh, it's a war on the workers.
War on the workers.
Yeah. You know it's time right now. I said it's time we started calling the shots.
The labor strife. And you can get a hold of Ann, by the way, at annfeeney.com. I'm here today with Bruce Bostic. We're interviewing someone very important in Central Ohio to working community. Bruce, would you like to introduce our guest today?
Sure would. Dan Heck is a very dear old friend. And Dan, you're a regional director now, I understand, for Working America.
Yep.
Was state director before that. And we've been involved in some fights for a decade or more now, haven't we?
Yeah.
And you worked, I know you guys worked on a Hugo Boss fight up in Cleveland. And a number of other solidarity campaigns. Dan Heck, regional director for Work in America. Dan, could you
welcome to Labor Creates All Wealth, Dan?
Thanks, I appreciate it. I'm really happy to be on the show.
Could you tell us a little bit about what Work in America is?
Sure. So, Work in America is the community affiliate of the AFL-CIO, and our mission is to represent workers who don't have the benefit of a union on the job. We have over 1 million members right here in Ohio.
How many is that?
1 million.
A million members in Ohio.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah, we're really happy, and they're really happy to have that strength in numbers that comes from having so many other members to rely on.
How many nationally?
and then over 3 million members across the country.
So Ohio is one of the real concentration districts then, huh?
Yeah, this is where a lot of our members have joined and gotten engaged with us. That's right.
Okay. Can you tell us a little bit about what Working America does?
Yeah. And so we make sure that our members have a voice, a voice when it comes to legislation and policy, and when it comes to politics. And we also work to help them have a voice on the job as much as we can. They don't have the benefit of collective bargaining agreements like union members do, but we do work to enhance their voice in all of the spheres of their life.
So Working America is kind of, you know, like people have talked about the Labor Federation and the unions need to reach out beyond its own membership and begin to mobilize people. And Working America is kind of an arm that does that. Is that correct?
Yeah, we're really happy to be part of the AFL-CIO and give our members a chance to do that and be part of this broader movement.
Right. So I understand you guys... before we go any further, if somebody wanted to jump on and be part of this, how would you get a hold of Working America, Danny?
So you can look at our website. It's workingamerica.org.
Workingamerica.org, spelled out.
Or if you want to get involved here locally, especially in Ohio, or if we have any listeners in Michigan, I'm the person to get in touch with. And you can call me here at my office, 614-223-2197.
Say that again.
614-223-2197.
I see. Okay, what are you working on right now, Danny? I understand we have something called local community action teams. Could you explain that a little bit for us and maybe what we're working on here?
Yeah, so the community action teams are where members come together to make plans and to make sure that their voices are heard. Right now we're in the legislative session, and so some of the issues that our members are really concerned with and that are impacting their lives are the federal budget discussions, especially around these potential attacks on Medicare and Medicaid and Social Security. Here in the state budget, they want to make sure that our taxes are fair and that we don't see any more job-destroying cuts in the state budget. And a lot of members are also concerned about the No Rights at Work initiative that might be moving. Sometimes it's called Right to Work.
Mm-hmm. Reduce the wages. That's my favorite catchphrase. RTW is reduce the wages.
And members are planning out which issues they're going to focus on the most this year. And the way that they do that is, you know, in any medium that they can, we work to help them have their voices heard, meeting legislators, writing letters to the editor, writing to their legislators, door knocking, phone banking, any way to get the word out.
Well, this past year, Danny, when labor and a much wider community, small businessmen, everybody rose up in opposition to Senate Bill 5. It was put on the ballot as Issue 2, and it would basically take away collective bargaining rights for public employees. I know every place we went, we saw Working America shirts and Working America flags. You guys played quite a role in that, didn't you?
Yeah, we were really happy to play a role in beating back that horrible attack. And I think it was really important to our members because these are folks who don't have the benefit of a union on the job, but they understood that this wasn't just attacking one group of people, that if you hurt union workers in the public sector, it actually lowers the standards for everybody across the state. So our members were there door knocking and phone banking and rallying and speaking publicly out against this.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Well, right now, we kind of touched on this No Rights at Work or Right to Work. I know that we've heard quite a bit about it now, and I know major attack in Michigan where they passed a similar law that would...
In the dark of night.
And which is generally how these things are taking place.
Right.
And, you know, from point of view of union folks, we see this as really an attack on working people's right to bargain collectively and have any real strength. Could you discuss a little bit about Working America's attitude toward this potential push to attack labor's collective bargaining called Right to Work, or we're calling it No Rights to Work?
Yeah, so I think Dr. King, especially appropriate right now, had a really good quote that just summed up the impact that this law had then and that it continues to have now. Said, in our glorious fight for civil rights, we must guard against being fooled by false slogans such as right to work. It is a law to rob us of our civil rights and job rights. Its purpose is to destroy labor unions and the freedom of collective bargaining by which unions have improved wages and working conditions for everyone. Wherever these laws have been passed, wages are lower, job opportunities are fewer, and there are no civil rights. We do not intend to let them do this to us. We demand this fraud be stopped. Our weapon is our vote. And I think that's particularly appropriate right now because there's an effort to put this on the ballot here in Ohio. If that happens, again, our weapon to fight this will directly be our vote. At the bottom line is these laws lower wages, they destroy jobs, and they really hurt the economy.
Well, and in 2011, we did. We exercised that weapon that Dr. King so eloquently talked about and you know, made the people's veto of that very onerous law. Give us, you know, sort of an outline of what this would mean for Ohio. I mean, what would happen, you know, to our economy?
Yeah, so if you look at the numbers now, you know, states that have these laws have lower wages and incomes, they have less job-based health insurance coverage, they have more poverty, more infant mortality, they have less investment in education, and more people die on the job. If you look at just the wages, so if you, like, balance out other factors. So you account for demographics and things like that. People still make $1,500 a year less in states where they've passed these so-called right-to-work laws. And in states where they don't, the wages are obviously higher. And actually, if you don't...
And that's across the board. That's all wages, all jobs, all classifications, not just folks who are in organized labor.
Yeah, that's right. And if you use just a straight-up comparison of the different wage levels, it's $5,680 less a year that workers make in states where they've passed these attacks on workers' rights. So, yeah, it makes a huge difference. Another one that I think hits home for me and a lot of our members, who a lot of them have kids and are raising families, is that you're less likely to have insurance. So states that there's about a 3 percentage point difference. And so you're talking about, in a state like Ohio, hundreds of thousands of people, including a lot of kids, who wouldn't have health insurance coverage if it weren't for these laws.
Well, Danny, I know this is being sold. They're saying, well, this is democracy. You know, you shouldn't have to pay union dues. And it's being sold as though... We just want to bring democracy to the workplace and allow workers not to pay union dues. So, you know, I have my own opinion on that. But if that's how it's being sold, how would you answer those folks that are supporting that move, saying that workers shouldn't have to pay union dues?
Yeah, one way that, you know, we explain it to our members and that members explain it to each other is this is actually forcing unions. To provide services without being able to collect wages, which is how it's designed to destroy unions.
Underfunding them, basically. Cut the funding for...
Yeah. And you could pass, you know... I mean, it might sound nice to have a right to ice cream law, right? But if we passed a right to ice cream law, it would probably drive all the ice cream shops out of business because you could just walk into an ice cream shop and force them to give you ice cream. So this is actually what forcing people to do things. Right? That's the actual impact of the law. And it's absurd, the double standard that's applied to when working people to come together and form an organization, that they would have less rights than working people coming together to form a small business, right? We should just have the same level of rights.
The way I understand it, you know, in my mind is I kind of think of, you know, if you had to go and, say, defend yourself in court or to go after somebody in court to get something of value that, you know, you were denied or, you know, in a lawsuit, for example. You don't get representation without, you know, having something at risk in terms of paying that lawyer to represent you. And quite frankly, your local union, your international union, all those organizations are your attorney on the job. You know, otherwise you're just an at-will employee. You know, they can you know, do with you as they will.
Yeah, which is why calling it no rights at work, I mean, in calling it this, we're trying to find something that communicates quickly the impact of it, right? Sure. And it's designed to destroy unions and strip people of their rights at work. And it's not surprising that when people lose their rights on the job, wages are lower, benefits are lower. Essentially, everything is worse for working people.
Right. Well, in point of fact, actually, in order for workers to get a union into a shop, there has to be a democratic vote at that point, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So really what we're looking at is allowing the corporations to take a second or a third bite out of the apple. Sure. After workers have democratically voted to have a union, now they're saying, well, we should have a second one and vote to emasculate the union.
Yeah, and do it by statute rather than actually have a vote to say, you know, we decided we don't need a union. Well, quite frankly, if all employers were that good, there would have never been a union movement.
Yeah. And part of what's so sad and outrageous about this, I mean, we think of, you know, when unions formed, and we think of, you know, it being a life or death issue, and it actually still is, right?
Absolutely.
So states that pass these laws have a rate of workplace deaths that's 36% higher than in states that don't pass no rights at work laws. And again, it's a no-brainer, right? If you're stripped of your rights, your employers are going to put you in dangerous situations more.
Oh, absolutely. It's faster, you know, speed ups, the whole nine yards. One of the great examples that I think of in the most recent past is the mining disaster that happened at the Upper Big Branch mine.
Mm.
More than a century ago, we realized that excess methane in mine shafts was a bad thing, and explosions would kill people. And yet, this employer got away with telling his managers, don't work on that thing, work on getting coal out of the ground, period.
Yeah.
And that's what cost 29 miners their life
yeah.
in the 21st century. Just amazing. Just
yeah.
amazing.
Well, one of the big things that economists are talking about is this widening gap between the wealthiest of our people in the United States and the rest of the population. How would this so-called right to work law affect this widening gap between rich and poor?
Yeah, and so I think when you see that impact on wages, right, you can see how this whole effort to take away workers' voice is central to this change in income. And it hits our members at two key points. One is in their paycheck,
mm-hmm.
and the other is when it comes to paying taxes and when it comes to who's covering the cost of taxes and whether they're paying their fair share. I think in this last election, everybody learned that the super rich pay a lot less in taxes than everybody else. And so we've been working on that. And then at the state level, it's the same kind of thing. So at the state level, if you're in the top 1% of income earners in Ohio, you pay just a little more than half as much in income in taxes over the year as people in the bottom 20%. And the richer you get, the less of your income you pay in taxes.
Sure.
And so, you know, it's
very regressive, as they say. Yeah.
Yeah, it's regressive taxes. And so it's outrageous that, you know, the governor has said that he's considering, and we'll see in the budget that comes up, that they're seriously considering making that even less fair, which means huge cuts to funding for local communities, too, through the local government fund, where state government funds a lot of local government.
Absolutely.
So, Danny, I know you have these local community action teams. If this is a key issue for Workin' America and the 1 million members of Workin' America here in Ohio, what do you plan to do about it? What are you going to do?
Yeah, so I think one of the keys is getting the word out, right, through every means possible, including radio, which is a wonderful medium,
right?
But, you know, writing letters to the editor, doing online outreach and mobilization, knocking on doors, calling each other. Essentially, every way that we can talk to each other, we want to engage our members in reaching out. And I think that personal contact can cut through the media noise and can also get into the media, right?
Another so Working America's tweeting. I got a tweet from
that's
Working
right.
America today. And I imagine you probably have a Facebook page as well, don't you?
Yeah, that's right. We also have a blog. And our members are integral in sort of in all of those sorts of things. And we highlight what they're doing and what they want to share on these issues. And I think it's an emperor is wearing no clothes type moment, right? There's nobody in Ohio clamoring to have the top 1% have even more of a tax cut and pay even less of a fair share,
right,
except for a tiny group of lobbyists.
Not
right?
Nobody, there's a small group of
there's
them.
A small group,
yeah.
Yeah. But among our members, you know, we knock on doors in communities all around Ohio. It's almost impossible to find people who will say, yeah, that's what we need. More tax cuts for the super rich.
Basically, what you're saying is you're going to use a multifaceted group of tactics, whether it be phone banks or going door to door, leafleting, rallying, and Working America is generally overwhelmingly young folks, right?
No, our members really? Are all kinds of ages, or activists.
I'm a member, Bruce.
Okay.
I'm a retired auto worker, and I'm a member of Working America, too.
Now, if somebody's listening again, and they say, you know, this is something I'd like to participate, you know, somebody wouldn't have to work 80 hours a week to do it, would they? I mean, if somebody wanted to come out and help out Working America a little bit, how would they do that?
Yeah, so... they should give me a call, and I'll connect them with one of our local member coordinators who are really there to support our members as they organize their local action teams.
Again, your Columbus number is?
And my Columbus number is 614-223-2197. That's 614-223-2197. And the idea here is strength in numbers, right? So we all, if we raise our voices together in a coordinated way, I think we can really change the debate, because the emperor isn't wearing any clothes. Nobody among our membership really wants to see these kinds of attacks on working people. And that includes liberals and moderates and conservatives across the political spectrum.
Well, you know, it's interesting you mentioned that. One of the issues that's kind of personally near and dear to my heart as a retired steel worker is this issue of the attacks on Social Security and Medicare. And, you know, the folks that the economists... Paul Krugman talks about, he calls them deficit whiners, or, you know, but, you know, we paid into Social Security. And so what is Working America say about this drive that says we have to give up our benefits so that others could have tax cuts for rich folks? Is that one of the issues you guys are taking up?
Yeah, so, you know, this, I think, really came to a head around the fiscal cliff fight that people were talking about, and then around the debt ceiling, you know, and we're looking at, I think, there's going to be more efforts at hostage-taking throughout the year, right? Mm-hmm. There's a lot of Republicans in Congress who just want to keep trying to take hostages and cut these
things. Seems like they're setting it up every 10 to 12 weeks.
Yeah.
Going forward, and we need to really tell them to get it solved and stop fighting over that, but go ahead. Tell us more about, you know, what Working America is doing to help, you know, preserve Medicare.
Great. So our members have been writing letters and reaching out to their elected officials on this as well. Tomorrow there's going to be a rally here in Columbus, and one of our members is going to be talking about how important Medicare and Medicaid are for her and for caring for her mother and her family. And I think... we really need to get the message out that none of these safety net programs need to be cut. You know, it's an outrage to call them entitlements when we've paid for them out of our pockets. And it's also not a solution to the problems that we're dealing with. You know, healthcare costs are going up. That's a big problem. Our members are seeing it in their pocketbooks. They're seeing it in their insurance premiums. But Medicare and Medicaid are parts of our healthcare system that are actually doing the best at containing costs.
Absolutely, I agree. They're of the most efficient in terms of getting the resources to the providers. One thing that I think is interesting, and I don't know if Working America is involved in this effort or not, is a proposal that would allow Medicare and Medicaid to negotiate with pharmaceutical companies for reduced medication costs. I mean, I know the Veterans Administration does that. Is Working America involved in that effort?
Yeah, along with the rest of the AFL-CIO, we're definitely supporting that as one of the real solutions to Medicare and Medicaid costs. So just letting them negotiate. I think one of the key things is actually getting provider costs under control. And so that includes hospitals and doctors and pharmaceutical companies, which are a big one. We also think that creating a public option would still be important in giving people another avenue for controlling their costs and controlling what they pay on healthcare. We should also be paying for results instead of just volume of services. And we're also working to end the pay-for-delay agreements where pharmaceutical companies essentially pay off generic companies to delay when the drugs become generic and are therefore more affordable.
Right. I understand that there's as well... folks only pay Social Security taxes up to, I believe it's $106,000 now. They actually cap it. I've heard that if they just raised that cap, it would be another thing that would essentially bring solvency to Social Security to year 99.99.
Well, yeah, and I've always been a true believer in the phrase "scrap the cap."
Yeah.
Why is it that working people pay on 100% of their income into these programs, and the wealthy, the ultra wealthy, get off scot-free on everything above 110 or 113?
Yeah, for any actuaries out there, it's $113,700 is the cap. So above that,
and most working people will never get above that cap.
Yeah,
and they'll pay the full freight on their entire income, and that's just simply unfair.
Well, you occasionally do. I mean, a lot of the folks
that work. Right. I'm an auto worker.
Right.
I made $170,000.
Right.
No,
that's well, you know, there's occasionally that guy that worked an awful lot of overtime, and you'll say, well, you know, he's not paying Social Security anymore. That's what that is, that cap.
I'll tell you, he lived in the plant.
That's right.
That was a rare occurrence.
That's right.
As rare as hen's teeth.
Well, for those billionaires, they pay that $113,000, you said, it's the cap. They pay that in the first day of the new year, don't they?
Yeah.
One thing I want to mention, Danny, you mentioned that this is a fight you're taking up along with the AFL-CIO. Well, I know that the Alliance for Retired Americans, the Steelworker and Auto Worker Retiree Groups, AARP, you're not taking this up by yourself, right? This is a fight that an awful lot of people that are Democrats, Republicans, and otherwise are taking up, isn't it?
Yeah, and it's one of the core reasons people join, right, is that we're part of these coalitions, right? And we have strength in numbers through the members standing together and Working America, but also because we stand together with people in unions and people in community groups and communities of faith. We all stand together to make our voices that much stronger. So, that's an essential component of what we do and how our members become a part of something bigger by joining.
Right. Well, thanks so much for being with us today, Dan. This has been a really great half hour. We'll have to have you back to talk more about Working America. Bruce, is there any final...
Is there anything you wanted to add before we take off, Danny?
We really appreciate the chance to talk and to reach out to folks. And if anybody does want to get engaged with one of our local action teams, feel free to give me a call. My number is 614-223-2197, and we'd love to get you hooked up with opportunities.
What's that website?
And the website is workingamerica.org.
Just spell it out. Well, Dan, it's really great to see you again. And one thing we know for sure is, like you said, tomorrow they're going to be having demonstrations. If working folks are going to be out there fighting, it's like Joe Hill. You guys are going to be there, aren't you?
That's right. If it's something's going to impact working people, we'll be out there standing together with everybody.
Thanks again, Danny.
Thanks.
It's time to end welfare as we know it and get those greedy chiselers off the dole. It's time to end welfare as we know it. Teach them a little self-control. For far too long, we've allowed these corporate hogs to belly up to the public trough. No more welfare as we know it. No more handouts. Cut them off. Now we should all be irate at this huge welfare state right here in this mightiest of nations. AFDC is disgraceful to me. I'm talking aid for dependent corporations. Free enterprise, ha, the cruelest of lies. It cost us $200 billion just last year. If they paid their fair share, we'd have billions to spare. It's time to tell them the buck stop here. Let's consider Charlie Hurwitz, the CEO at Maxam, holding Redwood Forests hostage in a vicious little tax scam. It's clear cut we picked up the tab for Charlie's union busting, then paid him to pollute our water. Jesus, that's disgusting. Charlie won't repay $500 million that he stole from a Houston SNL. What say we kick him off the dole? It's time to end welfare as we know it and get those greedy chiselers off the dole. It's time to end welfare as we know it.
Teach them a little self-control. For far too long we've allowed these corporate hogs to belly up to the public trough. No more welfare as we know it. No more handouts. Cut them off. That Taco Bell Chihuahua begs for bucks for Frito-Lay. And Poppin' Fresh from Pillsbury needs more dough every day. That thief Ronald McDonald and his sidekick Mayor McCheesy burglarize our treasury in ways that make me queasy. That nasty little mermaid took tax dollars overseas to hire thugs to bring poor Haitian workers to their knees. It's time to end welfare as we know it and get those greedy chiselers off the dole. It's time to end welfare as we know it. Teach them a little self-control. For far too long we've allowed these corporate hogs to belly up to the public trough. No more welfare as we know it. No more handouts. Cut them off. They've been picking every pocket here from sea to shining sea. We must intervene to break this cycle of dependency. ADM and Cargill, General Motors, Ford and Boeing, ITT and Lockheed, and that welfare line keeps growing, growing, growing. Now Congress says we can't afford to subsidize the needy, but before we slash the safety net, let's tell the truly greedy. We're gonna end welfare as we know it and get those greedy chiselers off the dole. We're gonna end welfare as we know it. Teach them a little self-control. For far too long we've allowed these corporate hogs to belly up to the public trough.